Let's see. Let's make March 2nd Jim Bunning Day. Oh, what a rat bastard this guy is, huh? But don't be fooled. He's just a Republican. This is what they do. We'll get to that in a moment. Right before the program, Cynthia in San Jose sent this to me. It's from the Brights March Bulletin. The Brights are, that's another word for people who don't believe in sky spooks and religious nonsense. Now this is an excerpt from it. It's very quick. It's about Roger Ebert, and it's timely. Apparently Ebert was on Oprah Winfrey the other day. I saw a clip of it tonight on the news, and I know he had had serious thyroid surgery. Is that right, Kathy? And his they had to take his voice box or whatever. No, that's not what you call it. What do you call it? Larynx. All kinds of stuff, all kinds of surgery. And it was very disfiguring surgery. But Ebert is writing again, and he has a computer program now that goes through everything he has ever written and translates it into vocalizations. It's amazing. So that all he has to do is type onto a keyboard, and what he types comes out in his voice. It's astonishing. This is from two sources. First, the Brights March Bulletin, but it was excerpted from a piece in Esquire. And it says, Roger Ebert, the film critic, wrote about dying in a recent Esquire article. His body has been degraded over time by cancer and cancer treatments, but his perspective is one that many a Bright can understand. To wit, quote, I know it's coming, his death, and I do not fear it because I believe there's nothing on the other side of death to fear. I was perfectly content before I was born, and I think of death as the same state. What I am grateful for is the gift of intelligence, and for life, love, wonder, and laughter. You can't say it wasn't interesting. My lifetime's memories are what I have brought home from the trip. I will require them for eternity no more than that little souvenir of the Eiffel Tower I brought home from Paris. I believe that if, at the end of it all, according to our abilities, we have done something to make others a little happier, and something to make ourselves a little happier, that is about the best we can do. To make others less happy is a crime. To make ourselves unhappy is where all crime starts. We must try to contribute joy to the world. That is true no matter what our problems, our health, our circumstances. We must try. I didn't always know this, and I'm happy I lived long enough to find it out. End quote. And then Cynthia wrote, Mike, I received the above as part of an email from the Brights March Bulletin. I thought I would send this to you in case you haven't seen it. Anyway, I love his outlook. He has it down. I'm telling you, he's got it right. I don't know what his prognosis is, but when he does eventually die, we'll be a little poorer for it. Also, I think we are richer for his life. Cynthia. Yeah, I completely agree. To make others less happy is a crime. And when I read that line, it just reminds me of every single Republican I know. Every single Republican in Congress, every single right-winger in media in this country, radio and television, who with their lies and their deception and their fear-mongering and their terror, and just the very face of evil that these bastards are. Every one of them, starting with this psychopathic Beck, all the way down to the juiced out Limbaugh, to the parrot, Hannity, and the rest of them, they have given nothing. When you stop and think about it, what have they given from their multi-million dollar podiums? What have they given to America? Nothing positive. Absolutely nothing. There was something flashed on the screen just a few minutes ago that the Bunning Amendment, so-called, has been defeated. But earlier today, as the Wall Street Journal reported, the Senate tied itself in knots yesterday as it tried to get around Bunning's objections to the spending bill. he was blocking a $10 billion bill that would have extended unemployment benefits and other programs because he halted it. He did not consent to unanimous consent, I guess is how it works. As the $10 billion measure got tied up, Senate leaders began debating another more than $145 billion bill that would achieve some of the same ends, including prolonging unemployment insurance until the end of this year. A vote on that is expected by Friday. And lawmakers hope to make it retroactive so that jobless workers would still get their benefits, even though it'll be delayed. Even so, those who lost benefits might have to reapply. Right? People who have been waiting because of this son of a bitch from Kentucky, this Jim Bunning, this, and I mentioned it, when was it, last week, that I think he is suffering from senile dementia. And Rachel Maddow brought it up tonight, too, by the way. Or did I just mention that last night? Was it last night, Kathy? I think it was last night. But because this demented bastard did what he did, people who've been waiting for their benefits and had them suspended will have to reapply, which means delays from 3 weeks to 2 months. Now think about it. Because of this man's illness, his arrogance, and the fact that he's a conservative, he had the goddamn balls to do that, to stand up in the Senate and say no, no. And then who was called on it, he said, I don't give a poop. Only he didn't say that. You know what he said. Rhymes with snit. What a bastard. What a Republican. Now, a lot of Republicans aware, according to Wall Street Journal, cognizant of the political peril surrounding Mr. Bunning's action, quietly distanced themselves. But others, including Arizona's John Kyle, you people listening on KPHX in Phoenix tonight, are you going to let this son of a bitch continue to represent you, John Kyle? Did you hear what he had to say? So for those who think it's Bunning and only Bunning, get real. Every single Republican member of Congress is a snake, a liar, a bastard who will do anything in his power or her power, although the female Republican senators usually are just, I don't know, they're like quilts laying across a chair someplace. I just wish the hell they would do something. But they will do this to you. They will cut your throat and giggle while you bleed and give you the finger and tell you you interrupted their goddamn basketball game. Don't you get it? John Kyle said, every time we pass one of these bills, we're adding to the deficit and we're not creating jobs. And it's a legitimate point for Republicans to make. You want to hear what Kyle had to say? You know, the Republican Party is the face of evil. How can anyone in their right mind oppose unemployment benefits during the worst economic situation in this country since the 1930s? Huh? How? Well, as Susie Madrak, writing at where Crooks and Liars said today, simple. Here's the answer. Simple, because when a Republican says people won't look for jobs because they're on unemployment, he's really complaining that they still have too much dignity to accept slave labor at slave wages. Now, remember what we've been talking about on this program for years. The perfect, perfect economic system for corporatists, for fascists, is slavery. That's how so much wealth was built in this country. In the 19th century and the 18th century, it was built on slavery. Black folk never had a chance to partake in that, huh? Their labor was stolen by white people. And every time you hear somebody talk about reparations, oh, reparations, I didn't own any slaves. That's not the issue. The issue is you're white. And because you're white, accruing to you are all the benefits that black people worked in this country for 350 years without ever being paid for. You stupid ass. You want to hear what Kyle said? We don't have time to play. All right, we'll play what John Kyle of Arizona, the Republican whip. Somebody ought to take a whip to him. But we'll play it for you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's ready. You gotta move. You may be high. You may. Go. But when the Lord gets ready, you got
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty
21 past the hour. All right, so John Kyle, another one of these Republican bastards who doesn't care if the average American who plays by the rules, works hard, and through no fault of his or her own, because people like Kyle are nothing but whores, no offense to sex workers, whores to the corporate establishment in this country who do anything to screw the workers, send the jobs overseas, debase the unions, drive wages down. People like John Kyle, Jim Bunning, and the rest of these Republicans couldn't care less. They don't care. And they love it when these dumb ass rank and file Republicans continue to vote them into office. It's astonishing. Go ahead, you right wingers. Put the noose around your own goddamn necks and step off the edge of the deck. I don't get your insanity. I'm sick of trying to understand you. A debate on the Senate floor yesterday over unemployment comp crystallized, at least for a moment, according to Susie Madrick at Crooks and Liars, crystallized the divide between the two parties in Arizona. John Kyle of Arizona, the Republican whip, yeah, you ought to be whipped, argued that unemployment benefits stop people from looking for jobs. Here's John Kyle.
So this bill really takes on the usual business of the Senate. There's nothing new, as I said, to create jobs. Now, what of the subject of unemployment extension? Coverage extension, which we've just been debating, that doesn't create new jobs. In fact, if anything, continuing to pay people unemployment compensation is a disincentive for them to seek new work. I'm sure most of them would like work and probably have tried to seek it, but you can't argue that it's a job enhancer. If anything, as I said, it's a disincentive. And the same thing with the COBRA extension and the other extensions here.
Do you understand what
So it's not a jobs bill, and it's beyond me how it could be denominated as such.
You understand what this son of a bitch is saying? And all John Kyle and Jim Bunning are doing is stating categorically to the American people what the position of Republicans is on these issues, on this particular issue. If you're unemployed, screw you. If you got diagnosed with breast cancer and you're about to lose your COBRA benefits that are only going to last another 8 months anyway, screw you. Go get your boob cut off. What difference does it make? These are Republicans. These are Republicans. There's nothing hard to understand here. They will cut your throat and giggle while you bleed. And the rank and file Republicans who continue to vote these ghouls into office, extending unemployment benefits is not about giving people an incentive to look for work, you dumb bastard. It's about keeping the unemployed alive and with the roof over their head until they can find a job. Son of a bitch, I hate these people. I'm serious, folks. I used to make jokes about it. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? These are evil. These people are evil. I don't believe in intrinsic evil. I really don't. So I use the term advisedly. But if evil does exist, every time you look at Bunning's face or any Republican's face, you'll see it. There it is, staring back at you like a goddamn snake. There they are. Astonishing. Department of Transportation had to lay off 3,000 workers as a result of Bunning's action. People who are already working. And this filthy pig, not only did he drop his pants and defecate all over the faces of people getting unemployment, he also went after people who are employed. 3,000 employees furloughed without pay because this pig put a hold on a bill that would have kept a host of federal programs operating. You know, the stimulus programs, the programs that the pigs on radio and television, Hannity and Limbaugh and the psychopathic Beck, the ones that mock those programs. The Labor Department says that 500,000 will soon lose unemployment benefits if funding is not restored. So they made an effort to restore it tonight. The Senate overrode this psychopathic son of a bitch. Millions will lose benefits if the extension is not granted. On and on and on. This is what Republicans do. You want me to stop cussing? Get these sons of bitches out of my country. Put them on a boat. Send them away somewhere. Scum.
Liberal helping of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking about these Republican pigs, I repeat myself, in the Senate and any place else you find them. You turn up a rock anywhere in America and you'll find Republican vermin just crawling all over the place. And for the great right-wing populace that infest radio and television, so they like to identify themselves. If you think they care about you, you poor, miserable Republican voting jerk, I've got news for you. Matter of fact, I'm going to share it with you in a second here. But the bill that Bunning was holding up, not only was it about construction jobs, it was about COBRA subsidies, and also doctors, it would have spared doctors from cuts in Medicare payments. He blocked that also. It would have extended small business loans and flood insurance programs. He blocked that also. So when these Republican sons of bitches try to convince you that they're for small business and freedom and liberty, please, for Christ's sake, at some point you have to stop believing these lies. Oh, maybe you don't. That's right. If you're a Republican, you are physically incapable of stopping your belief in this sick, nasty system that's eating you and your family alive, aren't you? God. The AP reported yesterday that the legislation blocked by Bunning not only would provide laid-off workers with subsidies to help pay health insurance premiums through the COBRA program, but also the bill would spare doctors from a 21% cut in Medicare payments and extend the small business loan program and the national flood insurance program. So if you're a doctor and you consider yourself a Republican, Jim Bunning was reaching into your pocket and taking money away from you. 2 million families were on the verge of losing local TV access because a copyright law that was expiring that this bill was going to renew. Now, right-wing media, the Nazis that infest radio and television, defended him. Tucker Carlson, on the March 2nd edition, that's today, of Fox and Friends, co-host Gretchen Carlson, I'm not Tucker Carlson, Gretchen Carlson, said of Jim Bunning, quote, "I propose to you that this is what a lot of people in the American public want their politicians to do right now. Speak your own convictions, for God's sake. You disagree with something? Don't worry about all the other backlog kind of stuff going on. This is what he believes. He's taking a stand, and I'm all for that. You unconscionable bitch, what happens if you lose your job at Fox, huh? What if you have to draw unemployment? Oh, never mind. Forget it." Laura Ingraham, also on Fox and Friends, Fox contributor Laura Ingraham said, I promise you, if you poll tested that Bunnings statement across this country, people would be standing up and cheering him and saying, we need more people like Jim Bunning. And then this half-witted co-host, Steve Ducey, said Bunnings' point is, look, we're out of money. How are we going to pay for this stuff? And then the other jerk that sits on that program in the morning, Brian Kilmeade, claimed there's a lot of other people who maybe are on the rolls that don't want to get off the rolls because they know it's going to be extended because it's politically unpopular to stop it. He's talking about the unemployment rolls. So if you're a Republican and you've been drawing unemployment, if you're a doctor and you vote Republican and you get Medicare payments, if you're thinking about opening a small business, you've been voting Republican, are you out of your goddamn minds? What does it take to move some of you people, huh? On the March 1st edition of Fox News Special Report, host Brett Baer said, quote, the idea of buying only the things you can actually pay for hasn't been a big seller in Washington for decades. And right now, one Republican senator is catching all kinds of grief for taking a position that millions of American families have to live by. Newsbusters. In a March 2nd Newsbusters post, Newsbusters is a sub-basement sewer filled with rats, roaches, and human excrement. But somebody there named Brent Baker wrote, quote, a retiring senator not facing re-election stood up last week for principle, insisting new federal spending be covered by a matching reduction elsewhere. But instead of hailing Senator Jim Bunning as a maverick, making sure the ruling party adheres to its promise a new spending would be paid for, television network journalists on Monday night painted him as an ogre, focusing on the presumed victims of delayed spending, end quote. If Newsbusters is a toilet full of human excrement, roaches, and rats, then Brent Baker, who writes for them, you get the drift. Limbaugh. Yesterday's edition of his sick, sewer-like show, Limbaugh said, now, who knew? Who knew? But if you look at this story, folks, this is the worst thing that could have ever happened. 2,000 federal workers are going to be furloughed. And there might be a delay in some unemployment benefits being paid. Oh, my God, this is the worst thing that's ever. Who knew, folks? That one lone senator from the minority party could wreak so much damage to our economy. Unemployment advocates are calling for Jim Bunning to be removed from the Baseball Hall of Fame. In a February 27th National Review online blog post entitled Senator Bunning's Unappreciated Gifts, former National Review economics editor and Cato Institute senior fellow Alan Reynolds wrote, quote, Senator Jim Bunning blocked extended unemployment benefits beyond their scheduled expiration on February 27th. That thwarted bill would also put off again a scheduled 21% cut in Medicare payments to physicians. Democrats were outraged. But why? And then he went on to claim the evidence is overwhelming that extending unemployment benefits from 6 months to nearly 2 years has raised the unemployment rate by a percentage point or two. How can Democrats possibly object to saving money sooner rather than later? You filthy, rotten bastard. Unemployment. The unemployment rate by a percentage point or two. Do you know how many people that is, you filthy pig? Do you know how many people that is? Another red state sewer toilet. That's another one. Redstate.com, I think. A blogger there wrote, last night, while most Americans were watching the Olympics, Senator Jim Bunning was standing strong for the American people on the floor of the Senate. Oh, it won't be portrayed as such, believe me. Bunning took to the floor to object to a unanimous consent request to call up and pass the House passed extension of a number of expiring so-called stimulus and other benefit programs because Bunning dared to ask the simple question of how these extensions would be paid for. How's come Bunning never asked questions about how tax cuts would be paid for, and a war in Iraq would be paid for, and a war in Afghanistan would be paid for. Huh? My God. Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, have supported Bunning's insanity. And Senator Jeff Sessions, the one that talks like he's got a mouthful of squirrel testicles, said he respects Bunning for standing like a solid rock. This is what Bunning said. He stood like a solid rock and didn't give in. He said, I'm not agreeing to it because you could pay for it. It's increasing the debt on my 42 grandchildren. And he didn't agree to it. You know, every now and then somebody stands up in the Senate and says, I've had enough and I'm not going to say yes this time. And I respect him for the courage he showed. Yeah, well, that figures. How does this guy talk with a mouthful of squirrel testicles? Squirrel nuts. I have no idea. 400,000 workers lost their benefits over this last weekend. Another 1.5 million would have lost their benefits had the Senate not dumped this pig bastard in the toilet where he belongs. Because of the shutdown that Bunning caused, 2,000 federal transportation workers were furloughed. Federal inspectors were to be removed from critical construction projects, forcing work to come to a halt on federal lands. Projects spanned the country, including the $36 million replacement of the Humpback Bridge on the George Washington Parkway in Virginia, $15 million in bridge construction and stream rehabilitation in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, $8 million resurfacing of the Natchez Trace Parkway in Mississippi. Forty-two grandchildren? Son of a bitch. Maybe it's more in squirrel nuts he has in his mouth, huh? Oh, no, that's old Jeff Sessions down in Alabama. Man, that's some bitch. I'll tell you what. We'll be back. Watch me walk in.
Had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. By the way, we have a moment with Bob coming up next hour. Yeah, he gave it up last year, but he just can't stay away from his word processor or computer or whatever the hell he writes on. So we'll be sharing that with him. And also a new study conducted by the University of Southern California that links religion and racism. You got to hear this. This is from Dale in Phoenix. Hi, Mike. Love the show. Thought I would share a few of the thoughts that cured me of the illness they commonly refer to as libertarianism. Although I've been cured for years now, the mental illness lives on in so many unfortunate conservatives and libertarians still today. Not a day passes without a fleeting glimpse into the self-absorbed state of libertarianism, of which I was once a self-identified citizen. The images peddled in media and regurgitated in conversation and argument are all too familiar. Self-made man, rugged individualist, free market, limited government, personal responsibility, and liberty But what do they really mean? These memes or cultural identities are so easily adopted, yet seldom critically analyzed. What does liberty really mean? For some, a knee-jerk reaction, freedom, may be enough. But freedom from what? Freedom from taxes and government encroachment into your private life? Freedom to be who you want to be and live how you want to live? Fair enough. These are perfectly acceptable and defensible positions for most of us. But what is lacking here is a deeper understanding of the consequences that such seemingly benign positions may hold. Let's, for a moment, imagine a world that adopted hardline conservative or libertarian economic principles and put them to practice. For some, a utopia comes to mind. Others, relative anarchy. I see a world dominated by greed, one in which community holds no value, and life is gauged merely by its monetary value. I see markets that are called free, but a definition of free I don't recognize. Free from regulation of any kind. Free to pollute our waters, pillage our forests. Free to overfish our oceans and game our markets. Free to purchase our congressmen. Free to contaminate our food and peddle poison drugs for our old and lead-painted toys for our young. Free from antitrust regulation. Free from competition. Free to collude. Free to price fix. Free from minimum wage laws. Free to intimidate labor. Free to amass wealth, power, and influence to rival the limited government that has in the resources to protect its citizens from its economic royalists. Sarcasm mode on. Of course, if government would just get out of the way, we could all do so much better. Certainly, all of our senior citizens would have forecast the exponential rise in healthcare costs and saved accordingly over the years. Citizens would surely reject goods and services that were produced without concern for their environmental impact. Without a doubt, families would recognize it as their sole responsibility to meet the overwhelming challenges of raising disabled children. Individuals would never again neglect their responsibility to have their child's toys tested for toxins before allowing them to play. It seems obvious that the consumer protections are to blame for our neglect of personal responsibility. We've become so overdependent on our government to protect us from dangers that we could far more effectively combat ourselves. Sarcasm mode off. Unfortunately, the reality is that libertarian or conservative economic policy is fundamentally at odds with reality. As it turns out, the free market principles themselves are nothing more than a corporatist's wet dream, and never have worked or will work in the best interests of the society upon which they're imposed. Dale Phoenix. Thank you for writing, Dale. I just wish the hell that every single so-called conservative, and they're not conservatives. Oh my God. You know, people on unemployment are trying to conserve their lives. They're trying to conserve some dignity. They're trying to conserve their house. They're trying to conserve food on the table so that their children's health can be conserved. These are not conservatives. Jim Bunning is a goddamn Nazi. Jeff Sessions, when he gets the squirrel testicles out of his mouth, is another one. So is John Kyle. So is every single Republican in the House or the Senate. Every single one is a liar, is a killer, is a co-conspirator in destroying the United States of America, our society, our social safety net, our livelihoods, our lives. In a different time, in a different place, once we figured this out, we would take the long bows and the swords and the truncheons and the knives, and we would hunt these son of a bitches down and dispatch them. And then we would get about the business of sane social interactions once again. But we don't live there, do we? No, we don't. Not yet. Next hour, we're going to do a moment with Bob, also the study that links religion and racism. And Obama's doing it again. He's willing to consider Republican healthcare ideas. Ah, yeah, he is. What else? Oh, we have Prairie 2. Prairie 2 tonight, I think. Do we have a Prairie 2? Yes, we do. We're just chock-a-block with fun things tonight. Sarah Palin and the Prayer Warriors are organizing spiritual warfare to take over America. Oh, just all kinds of things. I don't think we'll ever make it. But we're going to try like hell. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy Program. What's this? We picked up a new affiliate, this one in Palm Beach, Florida. I'm sorry? Not yet. No, it'll be soon, the end of this month. Well, that'll be interesting. Isn't Palm Beach just filled with rich people? All right. Prairie 2 writes, everybody sing spam, 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 spam. He goes on. Senator Bunning, who made his career as a major league ballplayer by throwing the brush back pitch, continues to throw at the heads of the long-term unemployed. While the number affected is not as bad as first feared, this is only because most of the states stepped up and covered the checks with the anticipation that Congress will come through with funds by the end of the week. Senator Olympia Snowe took to the floor today and called for an override of the hold, but the rest of the millionaire Republicans refused to join in, and the matter drags out while tens of thousands suffer. If the money is not appropriated by the weekend, then the number affected will begin to skyrocket. At least 1 million will stop getting funds next week, and potentially 5 million could lose benefits by the end of April if the number of weeks of eligibility is not increased again soon. Republican Representative Dean Heller of Nevada said in public what all conservatives believe, but most don't voice, in that they believe no unemployment should be paid, period. Heller is posting that we are creating a new class of hobos who don't want a job. Indeed, we have created a new class of chronically unemployed, but the 7 million welders, machinists, lathe operators, engineers, draftsmen, and other middle-class workers who used to build things in America want to work. Unemployment is only a fraction of what they used to make do. This 2-year vacation is getting old, and it's not like there are any fries with that jobs to be had. Nevada, Nevada, where the growth in service jobs was centered, has a 13% unemployment rate and whole subdivisions reverting to desert. So Representative Heller probably would rather only employed voters heard his remarks. Reports are that the worst affected areas in Chile immediately experienced widespread looting. That's what the corporate media calls scrounging for food. Being a longtime neocon paradise, the people of Chile are on average quite poor and don't expect any relief from their government. Even in Hawaii, the population bided their time while the tsunami wave crossed the Pacific by lining up for gasoline and creating a run on the supermarkets. The stores controlled purchases of some things. Most notably, they restricted how many cans of Spam people could buy. Long a traditional favorite because it will keep between ship arrivals to the islands, it is served everywhere, even at fast food restaurants and on sushi. How's your stock of canned goods? Prairie2.com. Now, as you know, this matter has been temporarily resolved by the Senate tonight. Prairie 2 wrote this at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. That's when he sent it, anyway. And since then, the Senate voted to deny Bunning his fund with the unemployed. And that's the other thing. See, you know, I've said before that pigs like Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and the rest of these swine, they do this for sport. They're multimillionaires. They want to see blacks killing whites and whites killing blacks and Mexicans running with their bodies on fire because of anti-immigration freaks have doused them with gasoline. They want to see torture when we round up people or buy people from our created war zones. They want to see food riots. They want to see children dead in the streets. They want to see dogs eating people's corpses. That's what these son of a bitches want, because to them, Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of these filth, that's fun. It's sport. It's better than watching the Olympics. They will do anything. Beck will do anything to get people to kill each other. He inspired the man who flew into the federal, to the IRS building. He inspires people who commit suicide. He inspires people who murder their families and then commit suicide. He is an absolute lunatic. And Fox News loves him. Oh, yes, they love him. Well, like I said, eventually the people will pick up the longbows and the spears and the truncheons. We will. In the parade, in the parable, I should say, of the Good Samaritan, Jesus warned religious listeners against what today would be called in-group prejudice, the tendency to think less of outsiders, especially those of another race. Jesus warned against that. The Samaritan, a member of a group despised by Israelites of that time, the Samaritan proves himself more charitable to an injured traveler than two members of the Jewish clergy. Devout listeners startled by the Samaritan's charity would have had to confront a difficult message, the message being piety and prejudice keep close company. And it appears not much has changed. This is from the University of Southern California, usc.edu website. A meta-analysis of 55 independent studies carried out in the United States with more than 20,000 mostly Christian participants has found that members of religious congregations tend to harbor prejudiced views of other races. In general, the more devout the community, the greater the racism. According to the authors of the analysis, led by Wendy Wood, Provost Professor of Psychology and Business at USC College and the USC Marshall School of Business, the study appears in the February issue of Personality and Social Psychology Review. Wood said, quote, religious groups distinguish between believers and non-believers and moral people and immoral ones. So perhaps it's no surprise that the strongly religious people in our research, who were mostly white Christians, discriminated against others who were different from them, blacks and minorities. Her analysis found significantly less racism among people without strong religious beliefs. Ms. Wood speculated, or Professor Wood speculated, that racist tendencies would not be limited to one religion. The study shows, quote, all religions offer a moral group identity. And so across world religions, including Buddhism, Hinduism, Muslim, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, the religious in-group is valued over out-groups. They analyzed data, by the way, from all available studies on religion and racism since 1964 when Congress passed the Civil Rights Act. Despite the involvement of religious individuals in the civil rights movement and later struggles for racial equality, the authors found a strong correlation between religious belief and racism as measured through commonly used survey tools that rate respondents' attitudes toward religion and racial minorities. And it goes on. This is not a surprise to you, though, is it, Truth Seeker? Of course not. This is the second study, the findings of which have been released in the past few days. The last one showed that atheists and liberals were much more in tune with equality and justice and truth and honor and decency. But, of course, we know that all you have to do is take a look at what liberals and progressives and atheists have done. Just where it concerns the social network and structure of this country. Going all the way back to the framers, all the way up to the present day. You don't find religious zealots or conservatives or right-wingers or Republicans who've ever done a goddamn thing for this country except try to divide it.
Truth Seekers, here's the Truth Speaker, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, Christian Cowboys. Oh, my God. 21 past the hour. Hate groups in this country are growing, of course. You don't have to be a wizard to understand that. The Southern Poverty Law Center has come out with a new report, as they do periodically. It is entitled Rage on the Right, the Year in Hate and Extremism. It was written by Mark Potok, director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence report. Potok has gotten more death threats than I have. The report lays out the fact that a number of American anti-government militia and patriot groups, so-called patriot, you filthy bastards for stealing that word, largely dormant since their heyday in the mid-1990s, mushroomed at an astonishing rate last year, raising grave concern about the potential for future domestic terrorism. 512 militias and related groups in 2009. 2008, there were 149 groups. And the report lays out the fact that this filthy, putrid, dumbass movement has added a layer of racism, largely absent a decade ago. Well, that's because we have a black man in the White House. Woo! And the fuel for this rise in these racist militia groups is fear, of course, and frustration, of course. Fear. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Right-wingers are cowards. Every single one of them is afraid of his own shadow. Give me guns, goddammit! I want guns. I want fully automatic weapons. I want 50 caliber assault rifles. Holy Christ almighty, don't you realize what's going on out there? Fear. The report says, while in the 1990s, the militia movement got good reviews from a few lawmakers and talk radio hosts. Some of its central ideas today are being plugged by people with far larger audiences like Glenn Beck, U.S. Representative Michelle Bachmann. Beck, for instance, repopularized a key conspiracy theory of these militia groups, the charge that FEMA is secretly running concentration camps, before he finally debunked it. The porcine Glenn Beck debunked it. Oh, hey, I'm just kidding. Oh, you dumbasses. You dumbasses, I love you. Come here, let me pinch your cheeks, you little militia patriot freaks. I love you. I love you. You're so easy to manipulate. Woof, 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 woof. You're so easy. Oh, God, Uncle Glenn Beck just loves you. I love 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 you. You patriot groups, you teabagging freaks. Oh, my God, you're making me wealthy. You're making me wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. Someday, I'll be as rich as Rush Limbaugh. I've already passed Hannity. I want to be number one. Oh, I love you, little patriot geeks. I love you. I love you. Come here. I'll tell you another conspiracy theory. Come here. Come here. Come here. Come over here. Listen. Listen. You know that triangle on your dollar bill? That pyramid? If you stare at it, your pee-pee will shrink. It will! Liberals put that on there! Don't let your pee-pee shrink! Oh my God! Don't! It's right there on the mural, Rockefeller Center! If you look close enough, there it is! Shrunken pee-pees! Beck loves you people. He really does. The Southern Poverty Law Center last year reported on the resurging militia movement, which it said was propelled by conspiracy theories about pending martial law and a move by Mexico to reclaim portions of the American Southwest. The Mexicans are coming! The Mexicans are coming! Yikes! Yeah! They're going to beat us to death with sombreros! Oh, my God! Run! Quick! Give me a gun! Ooh, I'm going to kill me a Mexican. I'm going to kill a Mexican. I'm going to kill... Oh, they're not going to take back our Southwest. We stole it from them fair and square! Besides, it'll make your wee-wee shrink! Give me a gun. With the election of Barack Obama as president, the report said the new wave of militia activity had taken a much more racist cast in the movement that gave rise to Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City on April 19, 1995. Of course, because there's something else that'll make your pee-pee fall off. Brown-skinned people and dark-skinned people, you gotta stop them or your pee-pee will just fall off. It'll go, boom. And then you'll have to pee like a girl. The report comes less than 2 weeks after Joseph Stack became a hero to some of these pee-pee dropper offers when he crashed a small airplane into an IRS office in Austin, Texas. Stack had posted an online manifesto detailing his financial problems and frustration. The federal government said he intended to give the IRS a pound of my flesh. And that's what's got the militia boys all upset. Pound of flesh from what part of his body? Oh, well, it's not really a pound. Be careful, you militia types. Your pee-pees are going to fall off. They really are. Radio. I'm on a Mexican. Whoa. Radio. I'm on a Mexican. Radio. I'm on a Mexican. Whoa. Radio.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malone.
It's about 25 before the hour. And it's time for another moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling, a moment with Bob. Written and produced by Bob Alexander. Tonight's episode, Arise, Mutant Nation. Hey, Mike, I've never been mystified by the conservative elite. They have a simple, easy-to-understand agenda. More. More money, more power, more of whatever it takes to continue to consolidate power and accumulate more wealth. They shamelessly lie, cheat, and steal while constantly rigging the game in their favor. Throughout the Bush regime and now during Obama's tenure, we see their agenda played out daily. All you have to do is pick up a newspaper. Illegal wars, no bid contracts, Wall Street bailouts, each more calculated to increase the bottom line of the more agenda. Nope. There's no mystery behind the machinations of the conservative elite. It pays off for them. But what has confounded me has been why the conservative base supports the more agenda when they have never benefited from it. We've seen the propaganda spewed out daily by Fox and the Limbaugh clones work on the minds of the conservative base. We've seen over 20 years of lies eating away at the brains of millions of Americans, and we've all heard about the authoritarian personality. From Wikipedia, quote, the authoritarian personality is an influential theory of personality developed by UC Berkeley psychologists Theodore Adorno, Elsa Frank L. Brunswick, Daniel Levinson, and Nevitt Sanford. The personality type, the authoritarian personality type, is defined by 9 traits that were believed to cluster together as a result of psychodynamic childhood experiences. These traits are conventionalism, authoritarian submission, authoritarian aggression, seeking to maintain the status quo, superstition, power and, quote, toughness, end quote, destructiveness and cynicism, and exaggerated concerns over sexuality, in other words, sexual repression. In brief, the authoritarian personality is predisposed to follow the dictates of a strong leader and traditional conventional values, end quote, Wikipedia. So it's that simple? The ruling elite uses corporate media and their degenerate mouthpieces to bamboozle the millions of Americans who were predisposed from childhood experiences to act against their best interests? Is that it? It's true that if people in authority lie to the masses for over a generation, you'll get people who are crazier than outhouse rats, believing ignorance is strength, war is peace, and chocolate rations are up. But how do you explain the millions of Americans who don't buy into the lies of the elite? Better yet, how do you explain people from within the same family who have completely different political points of view? Lately, I thought it might have something to do with that boogeyman word, evolution. I know 2 brothers a few years apart who had essentially the same upbringing, same parents, same school, same books, same food, same culture. One thinks Henry Kissinger was one of our greatest statesmen, and while the other thinks Kissinger is one of the worst war criminals who ever lived. One is a textbook example of the authoritarian personality, and the other is a liberal to the core. Is it some gene or group of genes deep in the DNA somewhere that suddenly are switched on? Or off? Is it something new in our evolutionary history where liberal mutants from out of the blue pop up? A study published in the March 2010 issue of the peer-reviewed scientific journal Social Psychology Quarterly explains it all for you. Quote, why liberals are atheists, why liberals and atheists are more intelligent, by Satoshi Kanazawa. Kanazawa, an evolutionary psychologist at the London School of Economics and Political Science, advances a new theory to explain why people from particular preferences form particular preferences and values. In the current study, Kanazawa argues that humans are evolutionarily designed to be conservative, caring mostly about their family and friends, and being liberal, caring about an indefinite number of genetically unrelated strangers they never meet or interact with, is evolutionary novel. We're born to be conservative, evolutionarily designed to be conservative, but being liberal is evolutionarily novel. Evolutionary novel preferences and values are those that humans are not biologically designed to have, and our ancestors probably did not possess. In contrast, those that our ancestors had for millions of years are evolutionarily familiar. Evolutionarily novel, evolutionarily familiar. Similarly, religion is a byproduct of humans' tendency to perceive agency and intention as causes of events, to see the hands of God at work behind otherwise natural phenomena. Kanazawa says, quote, humans are evolutionarily designed to be paranoid, and they believe in God because they are paranoid, end quote. This innate bias toward paranoia served humans well when self-preservation and protection of their families and clans depended on extreme vigilance to all potential dangers. So, Kanazawa's study goes on, more intelligent children are more likely to grow up to go against their natural evolutionary tendency to believe in God, and they become atheists. End quote. Young adults, the study goes on, who identify themselves as not at all religious have an average IQ of 103 during adolescence, while those who identify themselves as very religious have an average IQ of 97 during adolescence. End quote. According to Kanazawa, the evolutionarily familiar is conservative, and the evolutionarily novel is liberal. And more intelligent people are more likely to adopt evolutionary novel preferences and values. The problem is, the evolutionarily familiar has outlived its usefulness. The qualities that helped humankind gain a toehold in history are rapidly proving to be counterproductive to our future survival. And the dim bulb conservative elite and their base literally aren't smart enough to see that. The only way out of this multi-level mess is to utilize evolutionarily novel solutions. Our military and intelligence analysts say that the changing global climate will pose profound strategic challenges to the United States in coming decades, raising the prospect of military intervention to deal with the effects of violent storms, drought, mass migration, and pandemics. But still, the conservative elite and their bozo base deny global climate change because of snow. Our ruling elite, by clinging to the outmoded evolutionarily familiar, is having a psychotic break with reality. And how do you convince people they're being irrational by using a rational argument? Can't be done. You can only throw a net over them, pump them full of drugs, and hope after many, many, many therapeutic sessions with highly paid professionals, they'll have an aha, I see the light moment. Now then, let's try to pull that off when the people suffering from the psychotic break from reality own the asylum and everything else worth owning. Evolutionarily novel solutions ain't going to happen as long as evolution is a dirty word. And the evolutionarily familiar slogan of beware the other, beware the mutant, is the message behind every single program pumped out by Fox News. A friend of mine once said that most people are just smart enough to make themselves miserable. They're smart enough to see what has to be done, but incapable of doing anything about it. So, are we to join the rest of the dinosaurs trundling down to the tar pit? Or shall we arise, mutant nation, and kick the dummies out? Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling.
is the outrage? Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
She makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and he puts on aftershave to compensate for his ordinary shoes. And she said, honey, take me dancing, but they ended up by sweeping.
Randy in Kennett Square, PA writes, Dear Mike, I told my brother, and I will tell anyone who will listen, the stock market is not coming back. Why don't you and Prairie 2 tell folks to pull their 401ks out of the stock market? If you are mad at Wall Street's games and executive bonuses, ignore greed and pull your ignored 401ks out of the stock market. I don't have a 401k, Randy, but sure, I think it's a great idea. I didn't have one. IRA, that's right. I had an IRA account that started out with about $16,000 in it, and when it got down to where it had like $7,000, my accountant said, yeah, I agree, you probably should cash it in quick. No, I've never had money. I just never have. It's always been a struggle. Always been a struggle. But that's all right, because eventually I'm going to win the Georgia lottery. This is too long to get into tonight, so I'm just not going to do it. And this one also is, I'll tell you what, let's open up the phones and see if you want to talk. The number is 877-99-MALLOY or 877-996-2556. Ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do. Steve the banker was not in a good mindset when he wrote this the other night, late. Hi, Mike, another incredible week in the declining small business infrastructure of America. In less than 3 days, I reviewed 20 small business relationships that are heading for bankruptcy, charge-off, and term out. Revenue has decreased so much that business can no longer support American families. Runaway costs for core living requirements. 1, health care. 2, food. 3, fuel. 4, apparel. All that leaves a negative cash flow for increasing segments of the entire economy. A result? Larger foreclosure rolls, which is a fact. Result? Longer and larger unemployment rolls, which is a fact. The end of this mess is nowhere to be found. The war must end. It is creating a debt situation of catastrophic proportions. Debt servicing and military spending make the healthcare issue look like peanuts. End the wars. Invest in America, American education, American technology, American infrastructure, and the future will be ours to capture again. If investment is not planned for now, we will not come out ahead. And it is already scary as to where we are as a nation and where we'll end up. Steve the banker, very tired. Yeah, we have, you know, we have some really, really intelligent people who contribute to this program in a very direct way. Everybody from Steve the banker to Prairie 2 to Irish Dave to Bob Alexander to Captain Mary to On the Road to, the list just goes on and on. You know who you are. You know who you are. And everybody, you know, people who are smarter by half than I am. And I mean, the list is endless. Sanchez, I mean, just more. I've never been so impressed with the kind of emails I get from people who listen to this program. I don't know how in the hell y'all found it. I don't know why you continue to listen, but it's amazing to me. And all of these people are on the same page. They're not nihilists. They're not negative. They're not crybabies. These are ass-kicking, hardcore, tough, liberals. And I mean ass kicking. I would take any one of these people that email me in place of 1,000 right wingers to face anything. Survival, war, death, poverty, tsunamis, earthquakes, collapsing markets. And they all seem to agree. We're in the weeds, seriously in the weeds. How to get out. That's the problem. Now, I know there's a solution because, you know, anytime you have 330 million people on the same island, there's bound to eventually be trouble because you've got crazy people in that group. In our case, the crazy people all happen to be right-wingers, Republicans, conservatives, these paranoid, goofy, goddamn patriot militia types who are just, oh, booger bears are coming, booger bears are coming. The religious nutballs, man. So how do you handle that? If you have 330 million people and 10% of them are just criminally insane, my God, that's 33 million people. If another 10% are borderline insane, now we're up to 66 million. That's an awful lot of crazy in one spot. I'll tell you what, we'll take your phone calls when we come back. I can't worry about crazy. I've got other things to think about. But I can't help but notice it, right? I mean, how can you not notice crazy when you have sociopaths like Palin and Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and Riley and Patriot movement. Yeah. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. I mentioned this, didn't get to it. Let me just drop it in real quick, then we're going to go on to your phone calls. According to CNN, President Obama extended a bipartisan olive branch to Republican leaders today, stating in a letter that he's willing to consider several of their ideas in a compromise plan. Please love me. Please, Republican conservative buttholes, please love me. I'm your president. Please love me. Specifically, the president said he may be willing to commit $50 million to fund state initiatives designed to reduce medical malpractice costs. I'll do that. Two, I'll allow undercover investigations of health care providers receiving Medicare, Medicaid, and other federal programs. Three, I'll boost Medicaid reimbursements to doctors in certain states. And four, I'll include language in the final bill that ensures certain high-deductible health plans can be offered in the health exchange. The president said his decision to consider the Republican ideas, those are Republican ideas, was the result of last week's healthcare summit. He wrote to the Republicans, quote, The meeting was a good opportunity to move past the usual rhetoric and sound bites that have come to characterize this debate and identify areas on which we agree and disagree. I left convinced that the Republican and Democratic approaches to health care have more in common than most people think. End quote. Are you goddamn kidding me? He wrote that. I left convinced that the Republican and Democratic approaches to health care have more in common than most people think. Mr. President, yoo-hoo, stop smoking the wacky weed. You've got to stop, Mr. Obama. You honestly believe that? Republican leaders were not satisfied with this. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said this was little more than a few items, quote, inadequately addressed in a 2,700-page bill. P.S. Kiss my white ass. Please. I added that last part. Mitch McConnell repeated another Kentucky nutball, repeated the Republican insistence that Congress restart deliberations from scratch. He said, if a majority manages to jam this bill through, it'll be the same issue in every single race in America this fall. That's right, you twisted up little gnome. You bet your ass it will be. The Democrats will be able to go out there and say, hey, it's not good or perfect or wonderful, but it's workable for now. We got you health care. What do you think? And the Republicans will be able to go out there and say, if you don't buy this, you're going to prison. Oh, God. I don't understand why President Obama just doesn't do the Republicans what Jim Bunning did to someone who asked him if he was serious. Just tell him to F off, Mr. Obama. Just give him the finger. Just give him the finger. You can do that. It's all right. Come on, I'll give you permission from the white side of the equation here. You can do it. Go ahead. Go ahead, just raise your middle finger, especially some of these, like the squirrel testicle chewing freak from Alabama, Jeff Sessions. Just go up to Jeff and just give him the middle finger. Some bitch will choke to death. He won't be able to stand it. Oh, God, the black man, he get me. Oh, she, where's my sheet, my rope? God, whoop, ah! He'll croak. Jeff Sessions and Haley Barbour and all those Southern white boys, they will just keel over, Mr. Obama. All I have to do is just give them the finger. That's all I have to do. A young black man giving some of these old white bastards a finger, a young black man that has the entire United States military standing behind him, if you get my drift there, they wouldn't be able to handle that, would they? Jeff would just choke on them old squirrel nuts. He would just go down. Michael in Roswell is another heavy contributor to the program, who writes, you know, just riffing on societal collapse. If we were sensible, we could do it in a way that was relatively painless. In other words, a smart way. Pulling back from wars and trying to militarily encircle the globe, telling our international businessmen that they're going to have to learn how to make deals because the military isn't going to be there to take things for them. Building stability from the inside by emulating some of the good ideas of Western Europe. Reforming the economy to be much more self-sufficient. Learn how to run an economy without the need for the too-big-to-fail investment banks, etc., etc., etc. Or we could listen to the craziest 15% of our population who want wars everywhere. Want to spend more on the military than the rest of the world combined. Want to destroy the social safety net on which everyone below the top 1% depends. Want to abandon civil and human rights at home and abroad. And then on top of that, scream about deficits, but want tax cuts that primarily accrue to the top 1% and inevitably want the country to violently crash and burn because they think the aftermath will be so much better. Either way, We won't be the leaders of the free world anymore, if we ever were. But in only one of those two possible scenarios do we end up the world's largest and newest banana republic. Michael. I've never seen people who are certifiably, quantifiably nuts having so much influence on public discourse. I've never seen anything like it. Not in, well, okay, in fictional societies maybe, but not in real societies. I've never seen anything like this. In other countries, the crazy right-wingers are vocal, but everybody knows they're crazy. They're not taken seriously. I don't care what country it is. Canada, Mexico, Germany, the UK. It doesn't matter. Every country has their crazies. They're political crazies. They're weirdos. They're the anti-evolutionists, the anti-science crowd, the ones who say the fill-in-the-blanks are coming. The blanks are coming! The blanks are coming! Put anything you want to in there. You know, the Mexicans, the Slobovians, the Ethiopians, you know, whatever. They're coming! They're coming! Where's my gun? But in this country, they're not marginalized anymore. They're treated by mainstream media as though they have a valid, legitimate point of view. Because mainstream media contorts itself to try to avoid that horrible, spine-tingling, chill-inducing, wet-your-pants sensation that comes when they hear, "You're nothing but liberal media! Eek! Eek! Oh, I can't stand it! Eek! Eek! Quick, get me a racist patriot group! Get the camera on them! Give them some time! Where's Sarah Palin? Where's Michelle Bachmann? Eek! Eek!" Every other society marginalizes these freaks the way they should be marginalized. Are they crazy? Of course. Are they dangerous? Yeah. So what do you do with them? Nothing. Marginalize them. They're dumbasses. They're right-wingers. They're conservatives. They're neo-Nazis. They're skinheads. They're patriots, quote, 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 quote. All I have to do is sneak up behind one of their encampments and go, boo! And they run like bunnies. But in this country, no. We don't do that. We actually pretend like they have some kind of value. They don't have any value. None whatsoever. So I don't understand why we don't just ignore the bastards, except for the fact that they're great fun. I mean, when you peel away all the damage they're doing and see these little devils, they are kind of fun to watch. I'm sorry, but they are.
Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
From the great beyond. They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song. So you can stick your little pins in that voodoo doll. I'm very sorry, baby, it doesn't look like me at all. I'm standing by the window.
22 past the hour. Is strong. Okay, Charles is in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Hey, Charles.
How are we doing today, Mike? I have two things. I told Kathy one of them. The other one is you're going to have to apologize to snakes.
I know.
Republicans are not like snakes. Snakes at least perform a decent service by getting rid of vermin.
Hey, that's true.
And whereas Republicans are more like starlings, where if there's enough of them around, they'll eat everything that's in the area, so everything starves, and then they crap on anything else that's left, which prevents it from growing because, unfortunately, their guano deposits are not very good for growing for plants.
That's very true.
But anyway, for all those Republicans we'd like to get out of this country if they'd like to leave,
yeah.
For the Libertarians, we have two excellent choices,
yeah.
Very much like Libertarian-style paradises. We have Haiti, which is the least regulated country, and sitting very close to it, the second one, is Somalia. And as we all know how things are going in those two locations.
Yeah, they would be happy.
A true libertarian paradise.
They might be happy there, except for the fact that there's an awful lot of dark-skinned people down there, over there.
Well,
in there.
You get enough libertarians over there, it'll lighten things up a little for them.
That's true. All right, well, those...
And for our Republican friends, we have Peru, Uruguay, and Paraguay. Extremely pro-business.
Yeah.
They dump their toxic pollutants in the water. All the different water companies are privatized, along with almost everything else the government has there, and so they can really enjoy life there.
Yeah.
And I could see Rush Limbaugh in the Piranha River now being eaten by them.
Yeah, that would be good.
Poor little piranhas.
Yes, they would. I would pay money to see that. Charles, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I don't think I've ever been called from Tucumcari, New Mexico. Wasn't that that was the title of a song, wasn't it, Tucumcari? You have no idea. Why in the hell am I asking Kathy, who is still on antibiotics, right? Poor thing. I'm telling you ought to be taking Epicor, but that's all right. Jim is in Riverside, California. Hey, Jim.
Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Mike, I borrowed $500 on my credit card to donate to the Obama campaign, and I'm really disappointed.
You want your money back?
Yes, I'm going to sue him for fraud. I mean, this guy is not a leader. He's a good speaker, evidently, but he's not an effective leader. I mean, as much as I despise Bush, Bush at least got his agenda through. This guy cannot get anything done.
Yeah, it's a shame. You're right. He is a good speaker. I don't know. He would make a great college professor. I think he would really inspire people to learn. But
yeah, I wish he would, just come out and tell the American people, plain and simple, that we are being turned into slaves for big corporations and the wealthy people in this country.
Why do you suppose he doesn't do that?
Maybe he's got a gun to his head.
You think? Well, it's true, though.
Yeah,
know, you'd think he would be able to speak the truth, right?
Yeah, he's a good speaker, he's got charisma, he's got personality, and he's popular. I really don't understand why he just won't, say, to hell with the presidency, I'm going to be just a one-term president, I'm going to tell the American people the way it is. We are in a bad shape, and whoever told you about the stock market that's not coming back, and how the heck is it going to come back when all these jobs are being shipped to China?
Well, Mike? Yeah, that's...
We are being turned into a service economy here. There's no more manufacturing in the U.S.
Well, I just wonder sometimes, or I realize sometimes that the problem is too big for solutions, and anyone who promises solutions, it just blowing smoke up somebody's rear end. I mean, how do you turn things around when they're in this situation? I mean, where do we go? Do we build new factories?
Well, how about raising taxes on the wealthy? As Tom Hartman, I listen to Tom Hartman every day in the morning, and he says during the Eisenhower era, the top marginal tax rate was about 91% on income over $3.2 million.
Right.
And why the heck does, a CEO for United Healthcare got $700 million for when he worked for 5 years there? And what the hell did he do?
Figured out a way to...
That's what they don't understand. They don't get it, Mike, that these wealthy people are just feeding them trash day in and day out so you can keep all that money and keep these people just busy basically with trash on TV and just keep them running after their jobs and just blaming the government, blaming the liberals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I sort of long for those days, Jim, when, and thanks, Jim, I appreciate you checking in, for those days when the ultra-wealthy were taxed in a way that made sense. Yeah, if anything over $3.5 million, tax it at 91%. You're damn right. You miss Little Feet? Oh my God, it's a million years ago. Foxhole Atheist has a quick note here. Hi, Mike. There are several serious problems for the human species on the horizon. There's one will be the global famines, including America, coming in the next few years. The weather patterns are changing as we speak. And we are busy killing off the one species all mammals rely on for food. That would be the bees. Nearly everyone alive now will live to see the famines. The next problem is called isostatic equilibrium. Isostatic equilibrium. All the fresh water we are pouring into the oceans and the glaciers we are melting are redistributing the mass on the Earth's tectonic plates. This is what is causing the increased volcanic activity and earthquakes. As a side note, these are shallow earthquakes that are stronger than the usual deep quakes. The next two problems are a depletion of natural resources. These are oil and water. According to the scientific community, current oil consumption trends can only be sustained for about 30 years. Fresh water will be gone in about 50. These estimates are very conservative and could come much sooner. There's one mystery that no one has been able to put even a bracket around, and that is the methane bubble growing in some dead zones in the ocean. If it cuts loose soon, only a few million on the coast somewhere will die. If it waits a few decades, it could cause a new mass extinction for the biosphere. Well, as Jimmy Buffett would say, the bad news is the world is ending. The good news is there's a party. Isostatic equilibrium. I knew about redistribution of mass, but I'd never heard that term before. Thank you. That'll give me something to Wikipedia or whatever. Isostatic equilibrium. It's even scarier to say it. Bill is in Paso Robles, California. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mike. I got some more bad news about Obama.
Uh-oh, now what?
I mean, it's chilling, it's depressing, and it's maddening. Last week, I saw and heard Daniel Ellsberg interviewed by Laura Flanders on her Brit TV show.
Right.
Daniel Ellsberg, in very measured and intense, deadly serious voice and look in his eye, told Laura Flanders that Obama is taking us, fooling us into, taking us down the same sneaky, suicidal path as LBJ and Nixon did to us in Vietnam. Obama's doing it with Iraq, yes. Afghanistan, yes. And then I think he eventually tacked Pakistan onto the end of his real, you know, poignant disparagement of Obama. I mean, Daniel Ellsberg.
All right. Well, did he say to what end? Why? We pretty much know.
Permanent war. Permanent corporate-sponsored war, in a nutshell.
Okay.
And that Obama is doing it. He's pulling the wool over the American public's eyes with his eyes wide open. He knows he's doing it. He's not being frightened into it. You know, this is Daniel Ellsberg's,
yeah,
you know his version. And, I mean, he was telling it. He was shooting from the hip, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never heard anything like it. I mean, and he said Obama is just a slithering corporate rat.
Ellsberg?
And that's it.
Ellsberg used those words?
No, he didn't use those words.
Oh.
No, he didn't use those words. No, I'm sorry.
Do you remember exactly what he said?
He said that, you know, that Obama is underhandedly, going to keep us in Iraq forever, you know, now that we're already there, of course. So, you know, he's not going to pull the troops out of Iraq. He's going to make more of Afghanistan, and those two wars are going to be, in quotes, you know, permanent. They are going to be permanent wars, like to the tune of 50 years.
Well, this is not good news.
Ain't it the truth? Just let me throw in one more thing, and I'll run along here.
Wait a minute. Did Ellsberg have any suggestions what we should do, maybe?
Yes, he did. I'm glad you're right. He says that, you know, there is the counterpart of himself. When he, you know, did the Pentagon Papers thing, he said there was, there is someone right now. He doesn't know who he is, but there's someone in the Defense Department, something like that, who knows what's going on and could step forth and become the Daniel Ellsberg of today, right now. Period.
But what good would it do? Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers certainly blew the whistle on what was going on in Vietnam, but it pretty much came after the fact. And the one thing that's always intrigued me is that Ellsberg knew about this for years before he finally released them to the New York Times. And to me, there's always been a question as to what was the motivation? Did there need to be another 10, 20,000 dead Americans, another 500,000 dead Vietnamese? Not to question Ellsberg's dedication to ending the war, but let's keep in mind that Ellsberg was a Pentagon planner. I mean, he was someone who planned how to eradicate villages and hamlets and so on and so forth, right?
I think Ellsberg said that, in a nutshell, I think he said, in answer to that question you're asking of why he didn't come forth, that he was just scared, something like that. He was scared or naive, but basically he was just kind of scared to be, crude about it. But that someone could come forth right now, just like he did, with some sort of substantial paperwork or some sort of planning documents, that some very official, authoritative person could come forth and give, to Keith Olbermann or, TV or, somebody.
Right.
And it would stand and it would blow the roof off this thing and it would, it would horrify the country and, Obama would be shown for what he is, which is just another lying president to be cruel to. And, the one more thing I wanted to tell you, then I'll get off. before, you know, right before Obama announced that he was running for president, I saw him, you know, with another kind of senatorial characters, you know, on one of the cable TV channels, and, you know, and they were sort of talking blithely about the, you know, the distant campaign. And what I saw of Obama right then, I did not like, you know, I did not like the way he was smooth talking. I didn't like him. Right at that same time, I read an article either in Harper's or The Atlantic, and the writer of the fairly long piece concluded the article with doubting whether this incredibly promising, you know, super speaker political talent would turn out to be a corporate shill or a real man of the people. That's the long and short of what I have to say, Mike.
All right. Well, that, and I'm glad you called, Bill. Thank you. You know, I hold on, I've said this a million times, I hold on to hope, but I guess that's kind of stupid. Hoping that some person will make it to the presidency who does provide leadership like we have come to believe we've had at different times in our past. You know, even FDR becomes suspect if you believe some of the stories about his understanding about what the Japanese were about to do, and doing nothing to stop it or to warn the American people, or I don't know anymore. I really don't. Speak the truth, don't speak so. Before the hour, Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing? Great show, as always.
Well, thank you.
First of all, congratulations on your soon-to-be new affiliate in Florida.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
Those folks really need to hear some truth because, you know, when the condos they're living in, all of a sudden, those folks that own them, either the Chinese or the Saudis, don't accept dollars anymore. They're going to be in a world of hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. But to touch on just, you mentioned hope a little while ago, and man, after the last hour, we need some. But just in relation to Prairie 2 and collecting canned goods, et cetera. Just a little bit of hope there. There's going to be guys like me who have accumulated a lot of can openers. And I'm going to be on the corner giving them away when those rat bastard free marketeers are down the next corner selling them.
Right, right. Okay. And they will be, too, won't they?
Yes, they will. Yes, they will, though.
Oh, my God.
Out of the woodwork, they will come.
Oh.
And just a quick update. It appears that, unfortunately, well, fortunately, whoever, that cheerleader from A&M in Texas, Rick Goodhair Perry.
Yeah, yeah, he beat Kay Bailey Hutchinson and the teabagger. And I believe he beat them both decisively enough that there's no runoff required. But I'm hoping that the Democrat who, what I've been reading, has a better chance. I'm sorry?
Bill White from mayor.
Yeah, that he has a better chance than any Democrat in recent memory of kicking Rick Goodhair Perry's butt.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I saw on Perry was 51%. That's kind of tight.
Yeah, it is, but that's all he needed in Texas is 50% plus one. And if you get that, you're home free. There's no instant runoff. Well, nobody has that, not really, but so it's Perry. But I just wonder, the woman who styled herself as a teabagger, of course, Perry is right-wing enough to give anybody the heebie-jeebies. I just wonder how the teabaggers feel about that woman coming in a distant third. I guess she came in a distant third. I don't think she was even really in the running. And I wonder what Molly Ivins would say, since she's the one that nicknamed him Rick Goodhair Perry.
Yeah, Goodhair
Perry.
Yeah, I told my neighbor when we were at the polling place this evening, I said, you know, one thing I'm not going to be voting for here is a cheerleader.
Yeah, there you go.
Either Hutchison or Perry. No, no, thank you.
Right. Yeah, we had one of those.
Yeah, the third cheerleader, right. And oh, God, I had to turn the TV off or I had to change channels to a basketball game.
Yeah.
Because they were showing live coverage, you know, the primaries here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to a live picture of Chuckle Nuts at one of the places here in Austin giving some sort of speech.
Oh, God.
With some sort of big medallion hanging around his neck. It was weird. It looked like a silver medal or something. I don't know what it was about. I couldn't take it. Anyway, kudos to your crack production staff, and you are correct, sir. You have one of the most intelligent...
Fun audiences.
Fun bunch of audience and regular contributors.
Seriously. Yeah, they really are. All right. Well, thanks, Steve.
Great.
I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks for the compliments, too. That's very kind of you. Thank you. Take care. Got an email here from Mike in Sonoma County, California, who was one of Lowell George's roadies when he died. Back in the good old days of Little Feet. Gotta remember that band from Atlanta. Good Lord. Mike writes, Little Feet are still around and touring. Lowell died, of course, in 1979, and the band started playing again in 1988. Unfortunately, their drummer, Richie Hayward, now has liver cancer and has had to leave the band for a while. Thanks for playing the song. I was driving one of the trucks on Lowell's solo tour, so I can relate to the lyrics in Willen. For sure. That was written by Bob Dylan, right? Willen? Was it? No, I don't think so. The Little Feet used to write most of their own stuff. You think that was? Somebody will clear that up for us real quick. They're going to be in Atlanta May 14th. I know a lot of people don't know what the hell I'm talking about. That's all right. It's okay. They're going to be in Atlanta May 14th, and I got an email from somebody who said it's a Friday night. Take the night off and go see them. Man, first time I saw Little Feet was at a club here in Atlanta called the Bistro. It would hold about 50 people. But the Bistro used to get bands like Dixie Dregs, woo, Jimmy Buffett, back before he was Jimmy Buffett. Little tiny, it was an old house over on West Peachtree Street. It was an old house that had been turned into a music venue. And we used to deal reefer out of the upstairs and play music downstairs. All right, that's enough, Malloy. That's it on the phone calls tonight. Thanks for hanging out. I appreciate it. So I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.